And let me just remind you that we are recording the lessons since we're doing one every class, Sunday and Wednesday, a different lesson. If you're not able to be here, I encourage you to get online and listen. For a lot of these lessons do connect together. I found out the other day that our little visitors on Sunday night from Peters Creek, Dylan told me, he says, "Hey, I really like that class on prayer. I've been listening online to those lessons." So, Dylan, if you hear us, thanks for listening. All right, number 17, lesson 17, prayer requires discipline. This is the first lesson of part three, right? There's two parts. The first one, know. Part two, believe. Part three is engage. And that made me think of this passage here in the book of Luke. In Luke chapter 6, let's turn there together. Luke 6. So we've learned a lot this quarter, and we want to keep learning, but now we want to engage. We want to do. And it made me think of this in Luke 6:46. "But why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" It's a good question, right? We need to want to do the things that he said. And then he gives this parable, verse 47. "Whoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I'll show you whom he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently against that house and could not shake it, for it was founded on the rock. But he who heard and did nothing," that is, they didn't engage with what they had heard, "is like a man who built a house on the earth without a foundation, against which the stream beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great." Both men heard. The difference maker was that only one had done. One had engaged with what they had heard. And the Lord is asking us to be active listeners and then active doers. That might be repeating itself, but the moral of the story is we must now hear and do. And that's what part three is trying to activate us in, to engage us. Now, this means it will require self-discipline. And so it's not a strange thing that that's the first lesson in the parts of engagement. Self-discipline. You know, that's not necessarily a topic that's limited to the religious realm or the biblical scope of things. In fact, name some areas in life that require self-discipline. Yes, Miss Nancy. Right, right. They might listen to all your instruction, but if they don't go home and actually engage with it, they're not going to gain from it. Good. Did I see Charlotte?
I was wondering what word she said.
Oh, I see. Yes. Justin.
Pulling in a job of any kind, you're going to have to go in at a certain time and clock in and clock out.
Right, right. You might get hired on, pass the application process, but you don't actually start getting paid until you show up and, like you said, clock in and start doing the work. That's going to require you getting up at a certain time in the morning, right? Getting dressed and going and using your energy, coming home, restoring your energy, but then getting up and doing it again the next work day. Discipline is required for that. Yes, Marie.
Well, in the job realm, my job is to take care of the house. And if you don't have the discipline, you can be in utter chaos very quickly. So you get up, you get dressed, and you get busy.
That's right.
The same idea.
That's right. Absolutely. There's plenty of work that's done in housework for sure. And it requires self-discipline, or it can start to mount up on you. Julie had found this funny meme the other day that I guess was a housewife overcome by work, and it was it said something to the effect that if I'm missing, look under the pile of clothes, right? If I go missing, look under the pile of clothes. You know, there's always some kind of work to be done wherever your job may be, and it requires discipline. Good. Anybody else? Yes. That's right. That's right. That's right. Instead of sleeping in on a Sunday, we said, let's get up, put on our Sunday best, and let's go and worship the Lord. And the more we discipline ourselves, the less difficult it is, right? We take choice out of it. We just already know what we are going to do. Good. And it becomes easier the more we do. I was thinking of some other occupations that require some great discipline. You think about those air traffic controllers and paying attention to the screens and what they're doing, because lives are literally on the line. They give the wrong directions to the wrong airplanes, and it could end up with tragic consequences. So they must be disciplined. They must be awake. They must be alert to what they are doing. And something like that can be multiplied in many different ways with different types of occupations where people's lives literally are on the line. Yes, Judy. Good point. Good point. Yes, you have to spend a lot of time thinking about what the congregation needs and what phase we may be in, and certain people may be in. And so, yes, it does require a lot of time, and not just showing up and going off the cuff willy nilly with everything. Yes, good. Anybody else? Yes, Mom. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Sometimes we emotionally eat, whatever it is, we have to look within ourselves and say, why am I eating like this? Is it because I need it? Or because I'm trying to fulfill another emotion? Mm-hmm. So yes. It's something that we all battle, but we all have to put restraint on ourselves, just like we do on prayer and study and everything else. We have to discipline ourselves.
Great, great point. Yes, I have a sweet tooth. I love donuts and shakes, you know. If I could eat them every day without consequence, I would, but I know that that's not reality. That would actually be detrimental to my health, and so it becomes a treat, right? Something to do ever so often or rarely. But that's a good point, self-discipline. Charlotte?
Mine is the same.
Oh, really?
Take care of our body and
Right.
And with
overeating. That's right. Our bodies are tools meant to be used, and exercise is another way in which we've got to discipline. Our society has changed much, you know, from being very active, you know, in the field every day to more mental and sedentary. And so we have to still use and discipline ourselves to be active with our exercise and body. Good. So there's a lot of ways, right, beyond just the spiritual realm, that self-discipline plays a role in our lives. And I think we'll admit that the things that are rewarding to us require us to work and expend that kind of effort so that we might achieve those goals. And there should be nothing more rewarding to us than pleasing God and speaking to Him. And so it's very, very clear when one looks to the New Testament that self-discipline plays an important role. In fact, the word disciple, you'll notice, is linked to the word discipline. We are to be known as disciplined individuals. So in Luke chapter 9, Luke 9 there, verse 23, Jesus says here, this is the message of the gospel in essence. Then he said to them all, if anyone desires to come after me, right, to be his disciple, to be a learner, let him deny himself and take up his cross. Notice he uses the word daily, and follow me. That would just like we talked about getting up for your job, right? Just like we talked about the food choices we make, just like we talked about the air traffic controllers and the decisions they have to do. These things take place daily. Well, in our walk with the Lord, to be pleasing to Him, He says this also takes place daily as well. And daily one must seek to control themselves, deny themselves, and follow me. Now, in Luke chapter 9, there, verse 26 through 35. I think I got the wrong reference there. Yeah, I'm sorry. Once again, I got the verses there. I left the chapter out. Well, I'm sure it has to do something with self-discipline, even though I wasn't disciplined enough to put in the actual chapter. But the idea is the Lord does want us to work on these things, these choices that we make before Him. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 27. Paul here says, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. I think it's important to note that the one that has the choice over their body is one's self. It could be really easy to say, well, so-and-so made me do it, right? Or the old devil made me do it. But Paul said, no, I'm taking responsibility for my own body. I'm going to do this. And no one else can do it for me. I think it's important we recognize that. That's why it's called self-discipline. I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, because there's dire consequences if I don't. In Galatians chapter 5, we'll see here that it is a fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5, there verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. So, as we mentioned, there's multiple disciplines or facets or jobs in the world that require self-discipline. And just because one is doing that doesn't mean necessarily they're doing the fruit of the Spirit. That's just what they're doing to survive, with the necessity of it. But in regards to our spiritual service to God, it cannot be done without self-control. He's saying that is evidently going to be a fruit we're going to manifest in our life, taking control of our bodies, taking control of our minds and of our spirits, and making sure they're being used for God. In contrast to verse 21 of this same chapter, where he talks about envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. We talked about last week about some of these terms. Drunkenness, obviously one giving themselves to the bottle, removing self-control, the ability to say no to oneself. Revelries includes the idea of drinking and dancing after dark. You know, this half-buzz kind of state where one is just given to frivolous lives and are not in control. So this is a contrast to the fruit of the Spirit. As Sister Judy mentioned, even us just being here in Hebrews 10:25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, is an example of us expending the energy of the fruit of the Spirit in self-control. When it comes to our gospel meetings, right? every night of the week or our midweek service. Again, we realize, okay, I'm doing what God would have me to do. Now, I may have some other things that I prefer to do. There may be some other things that show up in life. Just like it may be so when it comes to your job, right? I may like to go on the golf course that day. Or I'd like to go to the shooting range that day. But I got to punch in if I want to keep my job. It requires self-discipline to say no to the optional and yes to the mandatory. Same when it comes to us coming together. We don't want to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. We want to be in control of our decisions and do what God would have us to do so that we would not fall short of the goal. Look in Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 11. This, you see, the Hebrew writer is kind of working up to a lot of these things when he gets to chapter 10 with the assembly, when he gets to chapter 11 and 12 about these examples of faith and enduring to that promised reward. He's working up to that, and he starts in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 11 by saying, "Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same examples of disobedience." He says this walk of life with the Lord is going to require diligence, self-control, in essence. 2 Peter 1, verses 5 through 11. 2 Peter 1, 5 through 11. There you see diligence again illustrated through this list. 2 Peter chapter 1 verse 5. "But also for this reason, giving all diligence, add your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. For if these things are yours and abound, you will neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. For he who lacks these things is short-sighted, even to blindness." Right? They're the guy that's thinking about getting on the golf course or getting on the shooting range and forgetting that if he doesn't show up to work, he could get fired and lose the ability to provide for his family. That's in the secular realm, right? Well, it's true in the spiritual realm as well. When we lose sight of the things that really matter in life, spiritually speaking, we become short-sighted as well. "Even to blindness, and has forgotten that he was cleansed from his old sins." So, in connection with our study this morning, Colossians 4, verse 2. Colossians 4, verse 2. It says here, "Continue earnestly or diligently in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving." So as our spiritual life as a disciple requires self-discipline, part of that spiritual life is our prayer life, and to continue earnestly or diligently in prayer. Comments about some of those basically general verses about self-discipline. All right. So, the author said in the book, having the proper perspective of the present and the future will help us with self-discipline. And there are some good verses that go along with that. Let's look in Romans chapter 13. So understanding where we are today and understanding where we want to be in the future is going to benefit our choices in making the right choices to be disciplined. In Romans 13, 11, "And do this," notice engage, right? Not just hear, but also do. "Do this, knowing the time, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed." So he puts one in the present, saying that we are now closer to eternity. So think about where you are today and where you want to be tomorrow. Verse 12, the night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. And let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lusts. So thinking about where we are today, where we want to be in the future, he says, don't give yourself to these things that will rob you of all of that. Things that, in essence, don't require self-discipline, revelry, drunkenness, lewdness, lust. Again, a lot of the connections we made last Sunday, the wanton acts of the flesh that are often given in and dancing and frolic that takes place today. It's all for the here and now. It's all for just a moment. Don't give yourself to those kinds of things. Make no provisions for the flesh to fulfill its lust. Why? Because now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. Don't fall short of the goal line. In 1 Peter chapter 4, 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 7. 1 Peter 4, 7. Here he says, but the end of all things is at hand. Therefore be serious and watchful in your prayers. So the author cited this verse, obviously thinking about the things in the future, understanding and recognizing that they are at hand, right? Our salvation is now nearer than when we first believe. Every day we grow closer to it. Every day it gets a little bit closer. Therefore, be serious and watchful in your prayers. Peter speaks a lot about seriousness in this one epistle. This word used for serious comes up three times in it. The first one being in chapter 1, verse 13, where he says, therefore, gird up the loins of your mind and be sober. That's the word, serious. And rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So take control of your minds. Use them as God has given you to His glory. Be sober, be serious. And the other one is in chapter 5 and verse 8. If we want to be successful against the devil, he says you're going to have to be serious then. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. You won't have any chance to fight against him successfully. You're going to have to be serious. Be watchful in your prayers. I also have here chapter 4, 17 through 19. It says here, for the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God? He goes on to say, now if the righteous one is scarcely saved, where will the ungodly and sinner appear? Therefore let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls to Him in doing good as to a faithful Creator. So, a lot of what's going to keep us, we might say, in the fight, right? Pushing forward instead of slipping back, is to think about the rewards to come in the future by our present engagement in the present, right? Knowing that judgment starts at the house of God. And I want my hope to rest fully upon the Lord Jesus Christ. That I need to be sober. I need to be prayerful, because that is the way I talk with my God, whom I have every intention in seeing in the future. And so I want to have that relationship with Him in the present. Comments or questions so far? Yes, Judy, huh?
Be good, follow get the church to help you in your prayers for you, which are so, I don't think we realize what they mean to people, or what they mean to me. To just, sometimes you realize, the Lord, I just can't do this, I need help. And he gives you fellow Christians to help.
Yes.
I believe that very strongly. You know, I believe in strong prayer. Try to do that.
Yes.
Absolutely,
yeah. Because we would all like to be spiritual supermen and superwomen. But we're not. And that's why he gave us the church, right? Those, because we're all going to have those moments of weakness and being discouraged. And it's helpful to have a community to help pick us back up. Tell us what we ought to be doing and give us the encouragement and prayers to do such. That's right. Exactly what Paul. That's right. Good. And Peter. Good. Anybody else? Good comment. All right. So in 1 Peter chapter 2, here in verse 9, he says, "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood." Now we know exactly what priests were to be doing in the Old Testament, what their commission was, what their job was, right? They were that spiritual connection, ultimately, between God and the people. They were giving themselves to prayer and to offerings. And now in the New Testament, he says, you are the royal priesthood, giving your lives as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. We ought to be so involved in our prayers and in our worship, knowing that we are his own special people. So then the question is, why is it then so difficult to discipline ourselves? Okay. So you're saying then we might struggle with our value system and understanding what is important. Okay, good, good. Anybody else? Yes, Nancy. Yes.
But even also Moses, when the children, they inherited all of this prosperity. And we need to be aware of the times when everything is going smoothly. Because if you're honest with yourself and something that you are, you realize that.
Right. So our affluence, abundance sometimes can be distracting. Now, often is distracting. It's why the Lord said how hard it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Because he knew it wouldn't be easy because of those distractions. Right. Good. You're good. Good. Anybody else? Judy.
And what she's saying in the hardships, but if we can discipline ourselves to be thankful when things are good, it's easier to get through the hardships with your prayer.
Very true. Very true. Thankfulness can turn the night into day. It really can. Because often when we are down, we're very focused on what isn't right. But when we start giving the list of things that are right, that we are thankful for, it begins to shift the balance. Yes. So that's true. I'm sorry. Had that connected to discipline?
You discipline yourself to be thankful about that, not just be so spoiled.
Okay. All right. All right. So, and because of our being spoiled, sometimes it can make us to forget to be thankful. Good. All right. Nancy.
And I've brought this up in the past, but when you notice in the New Testament, so many of those letters are at length of prayer. You read it once in a while, and I started to pray. It was prayer, what do we do, give, and give.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Pray without ceasing. That's in every time. Let your request be known with faith.
Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a tremendous connection. So many times prayer and thanksgiving are mentioned within the same breath. It's almost as if he wants that habit to be developed, that spiritual muscle to be so strong, so that when the hardship does come, we're very used to focusing on the things that have been a blessing, thankful for. Good. All right. So we recognize that indeed it is a challenge, right? To discipline ourselves. Now, the author spoke about mental and moral discipline and how each one of those play a role in our lives as well. What is the emphasis of each? Because obviously being morally disciplined, you have to use your mind. But what is the emphasis the author was trying to get across there? Yes. Right, that's right, exactly. If we're not trying to keep ourselves as best as we can from sinful activity, then we wouldn't be giving ourselves to prayer, you know, because we recognize we're blatantly doing what is wrong and focused on what is wrong. Good. Mentally, go ahead. Self-indulgence, right. Self-indulgence is in contrast to moral discipline. And part of moral discipline is prayer. Good. So they're kind of at odds with each other. What do you say about mental discipline? Right.
We need to really put interest and emphasize our mental first before we can proceed with physical because it follows.
Okay, so the mental discipline, I think he had more in mind what you were saying earlier about our value system. What we make important in life. And he said, there are so many innocent thoughts and activities that can steal our time, energy, and focus. So these might be things that are not necessarily sinful of themselves, but we just get the balance out of whack. So mentally we have to get ourselves in check and say, you know what, I spent enough time watching TV or doing this activity. I need to focus on praying, on study. So there's a number of passages that we can look at in these regards. Let's look at Proverbs 15, verse 8. So in regards to moral discipline, very, very important if we want God to hear our prayers. Proverbs 15, verse 8, the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is His delight. So when we're giving ourselves to wickedness, it's an abomination, but the upright, the prayer is His delight. And then in Proverbs 15, verse 29, the Lord is far from the wicked, but He hears the prayers of the righteous. So we need to stay morally disciplined if we want Him to hear our prayers. By the way, did you know prayer is mentioned 3 times in the book of Proverbs? And two times that's found in chapter 15. I would have thought it had been a little more in Proverbs, but only 3 times is the word prayer mentioned. And we see it's in regard and connection to moral discipline. Luke chapter 5. Luke 5 there, verse 8. So here's an illustration of Peter when he thought about himself and his life before Christ, and he saw the holiness of the Lord. And in Luke 5, verse 8, when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I'm a sinful man, O Lord." He didn't feel any connection with the Lord because of his life in contrast with the Lord's life. He felt he needed to be away from the Lord and the Lord away from him. And that was a very telling statement to make, because ultimately it reveals the hearts of sinners. So given to unholiness that they want to have no business with the Holy God. Thankfully, the Lord came to Peter to show him and us that he wants to forgive us of our unholiness and our sinfulness. And if those that are given to a lack of moral discipline could wake up and realize that, that it is so much more satisfying to have a God that loves you and is pleased by you than to drink bottle after bottle after bottle, trying to find a little hope at the end of the bottle every time, and nothing is there. But because of that life of not self-discipline, they feel no connection to God. If they can realize that God wants to forgive them of that, then they'll find satisfaction and forgiveness and happiness and hope. See, even David himself in Psalm 32, verses 3 through 5, there he talks about when he kept silent, when he thought about his sin and his transgression with Bathsheba and Uriah, and he felt no connection to God. How can I talk to God? Finally, when he did confess, he found healing. So the point is this, that when we give ourselves to not disciplining our bodies morally, we're going to feel a disconnect from God, feel like we need to be away from God. We don't want that. Prayer brings us closer to God. Mental discipline, the things in our lives that can become our idols. 1 John 5:21, where where John simply says at the end of 1 John, "My little children, keep yourselves from idols." And we know that idols can be mental idols, can't they? Colossians 3:5, the very end says, "Covetousness, which is idolatry." So again, the thing that we're putting our minds on, it may not be the attaining of all these things, right? One can be a poor person and give themselves to the idolatry of covetousness because everything they see they want and they don't have. So one has to be mentally disciplined to say these things aren't the important things in life. And in Colossians chapter 3, verse 2, that's exactly what Paul is saying. Set your mind where? On things above. That's right. Be mentally disciplined and not on things of the earth. We're almost out of time, but I thought this might be a good application. How often do we bow our heads to look at our phones versus to pray to God? And I'm included in that too. And that might make us realize, where do I need to be more mentally disciplined and focused on the things of God and not so much on the things of earth? If we're going to be engaging in prayer, as the booklet is trying to encourage us to do, we're going to need self-discipline. Final thoughts or comments before we end our class? Yes, Judy. Yes, he does. That's right. Good, good. Anybody else? Marie.
Real quick about that idea about idols. It doesn't mean little statues. It means anything. The actual definition is an object of extreme devotion.
Extreme devotion, yeah.
It's your job.
Yeah.
Sometimes family becomes more important than God.
So yeah.
Anything you put above God.
Great.
And that's why it's diligence.
Yes.
The definition of diligence is careful and persistent work.
Yes.
It's constant. You're constantly working at making yourself stronger.
Right. Thank you for your good comments, everybody. Good class. We'll dismiss our class now at this time.